Welcome to More Business, More Life podcast. I'm your host, Steve Napolitan. This show is for C-level executives, entrepreneurs, coaches, consultants, and speakers who have found success, but they don't have the life that they want. On this weekly show, we're going to be talking about business skills to have more business while we design our ideal life and have more life. More business, more life without sacrifice. Welcome to the show. Welcome to the More Business, More Life podcast. And today our guest is Pete Romano from Segwick, and he is the creator and founder of Segwick. And we're going to talk about how, you know, he went from being in the industry, creating jingles for big corporate names that you would know and working with some of the most talented actors and performers, and then creating his own business around ads to focus on small business. He noticed so many gaps around how businesses ran and how we can improve our own lives, how we run our businesses, that he created a software so you can actually start building in the customer journey in a new way, bringing it together. There are many other apps out there, but this brings it all together with a focus so that you can do what you do best. And then I like to say delegate. In this case, we're automating other parts through software so that you can do what you do. And the conversation is not just about this software. It's also going to be about Pete's life, how he went from working really hard and being that entrepreneur as well to now transforming and giving himself space for his own life while he continues to grow his successful business. So much to uncover. Let's jump in. Pete, welcome to the show. I'm excited to have you.
I'm thrilled to be here with you, Steve.
It's been, you know, we've known each other for years now. And so it's a treat to finally have this discussion publicly and here recording it, because I think there's a lot we have to talk about from your personal life, being an entrepreneur, and how, you know, how the workload comes about when we're being an owner of a business. And then that comes into your business that you currently have. Segwick is all about helping people automate things so that their business can run more smoothly and they can have more life. So I think having you on the More Business, More Life show is perfect. So maybe let's start with that. You know, your journey of being an entrepreneur and why you created Segwick, because I think it really plays into this whole conversation that we're going to have.
Before I dive into that, I just want to just tell you and tell your audience, you know, because when you and I first met, I think it was in San Francisco, and we were in the basement of what must have been the hottest seminar the world has ever seen. And when I say hot, it wasn't just, you know, hot like the best stars and the best people, but it was literally maybe 95 degrees. And we were in the basement, and I heard you speak for the first time. And I said, there's a guy that I really just need to line up with, because I just loved everything that you were saying about how to really consciously free yourself. Because up until then, you know, when I joined the Hero Club, that's our mutual group together, I was just slogging day to day, just working and working and working without any rest, probably for months and months, years on end. And getting out to San Francisco was, you know, with the group was an unbelievable hike and an unbelievable leap for me in a business to just travel across the country. I'm from New Jersey. You know, just get on a plane and go hang out with a bunch of other entrepreneurs. And so it was a huge leap. And then to hear you frame the conscious effort to limit your work exposure and to develop a work-life balance, it sort of just gave me permission to begin to think of that for myself. And I want to thank you for that, Steve, from the bottom of my heart.
Pete, I appreciate you sharing that. Like, in all the times we talked, I never knew like that moment was such a big deal.
These moments come and go in life, and you don't know how, you know, a word you say positively or sometimes not you, but like, you know, a negative word can just be construed by a period, and people internalize that. And so We put this energy out into the world, and you don't know where that energy always lands. And hopefully you're putting out good energy and it's landing in good ways. And so thank you again.
Well, my pleasure. And actually, just a quick diversion for a second, because I know how big music is in your life, and I felt compelled to be around music as well. And a kid in school pushed me
actually pushed me, like, and there was a couple of times I got made fun of and then pushed me and told me I sucked and not to play anymore. And then I stopped for many, many years. And now in my adult life, I've picked it back up. I've shifted my beliefs because it was a belief. Then I took ownership of that belief and I said, yeah, I can't play music. I can't. You know?
Yeah, it gets ingrained in your head. And then you're letting other people formulate your belief structures. And a lot of people in life fall prey to that. They live their entire lives being guided by the well-intentioned or poor intentioned guidance of others. And so it's hard to avoid, but if you're conscious about where you want to go and the direction you're going, I guess you can try to keep that at bay.
Absolutely. And you're totally right. It's not necessarily that, you know, maybe that kid in school is a bully and it isn't the best positive thing, but sometimes it could be our parents and it actually is them actually thinking it's the best thing for you, or could be our school. It could be other community organizations. It could be our government. It could be the culture that you grow up in. There's so many things. So I love that part. And I know that could be a whole nother part of the conversation. Maybe we'll just shelve that for a minute because I want to let people get to know you for a moment before we get deeper into this conversation. But I just want to say I'm grateful that we were able to have that moment and that we're even able to pick this apart, because I think there's part of us that you and I have had the same thing where, you know, we come from immigrant families and then you have this work ethic that's instilled in our families. And then, like you said, you just keep working. And like you said, it was even for years to even like find that breath to give yourself space, you know? And so, you know, I think that even, maybe we start there, because I think even that thing is what caused you to create the current company that you're making now, that you just launched this year. So maybe tell that story as you became an entrepreneur and then led you to Segwit. Maybe this is a perfect spot to share that.
Yeah. So my career started early on with corporate advertising, you know, doing jingles and music production for some of the biggest brands in the world, like Exxon and Allstate Insurance. And I was on a team that would write the music and do the sound effects. And it was always really, really high class stuff and got me exposure to some of the best in the business. And you, the best editors, the best directors, the best actors, doing sessions with Marissa Tomei or even Robin Williams was one of the most fabulous 5 days, working days of my life. The unbelievable improvisational genius that man was. And so when the economy fell apart around 2007, 2008, and all of that work dried up in New York, I decided that, you know, I just started looking at TV commercials that were for small businesses. And we all sort of know the local TV spot that's just, you know, a little less than perfect in its design. Maybe it's a bad green screen, maybe it's a bad script, or a guy with a bad accent that he's unaware. It could be just any humorous way. And so I said, I could do that better. I'm producing fantastic spots in the city. And so I went to work doing marketing for small businesses. And I always had a place in my heart for a person who could just set up shop. I always found it a sort of lack of justice when a big corporation can come in and put out of business a smaller guy. And so, and my parents weren't even business owners. I don't even really know where that came from, that kernel of a concern. And so I had the slogan that every small business deserves an edge, because I believed at the time that if you knew the right people and you had the right connections, then you could succeed. You could build a better campaign. You could do better marketing. And so that was the premise of starting what was called the Joey Creative Agency at the time. And the Joey was a fun mascot. I had the coolest little baby kangaroo mascot that this amazing cartoonist drew for me. It had the cute nose and cute little feet and had the little pouch Joey written on it. And it was perfect for that market. But how I got from there to software development was that I just saw that from an operational perspective, the small businesses were running around doing everything, wearing every single hat. And coming from the corporate advertising background, I said I was spoiled. You know, when you're spoiled, when you're the engineer of a spot and the producer shows up on time, or you know, the script is ready, or the appointments actually kick off and happen on schedule. When you go into small business world, you know, you go to meet a client and they're working with their accountant, or they forgot that they had to pick up their kids. And so, you know, you start to find out like, wow, this is a whole different world. You mean I wasn't the most important meeting of this person's day? And so that was a big culture shock that I had to get used to. But I respected it because these people were, you know, working 10, 12, 15 hours a day. And I wanted to help them, you know, beyond the marketing. And so I started to dabble in software. And eventually the customer journey management system that we built called Segwick has emerged. And that's how it happened.
It's what it sounds like for me, the word that I would, you know, and I don't mean to over-summarize, but it's like caring.
Yeah.
I mean, you cared enough about the people you're in front of, whatever was going on, you know, finding that solution. You know, it's interesting. We have, I don't even know if you know how similar our patterns. So I wasn't in music like you, but I was in filmmaking. And then I started getting asked to do commercials. And so in the 90s, I was doing 30-second spots and putting them on television. And then
right.
I came into my career. And I knew you knew that market side, but how I got into systems, it's very interesting because basically you got into systems because you were helping with marketing and then you saw that they needed more help. So one time I put a 30-second commercial together, and this was a little ways in. So we were getting pretty good at what we were doing. And this client calls and so not only did I make money from making the spot, I realized that if I did the media buy, I could get those residual incomes. You know, making a commercial was like a one-time project. I was trying to look at the other ways to have other revenue. So we started doing media buys. I was getting good at this, you know, learning where to put someone, the right audience and all that stuff.
Right.
And the client calls and he's like, "Steve, turn it off." I'm like, "Turn what off?" He's like, "My ads." And I'm like, "What do you mean turn them off?" He said, "I'm getting too many calls. I can't handle it. I don't know what to do. I need you to turn that." And I was laughing. I said, "Can I put that on my website?" And he said, "I'm not joking." And this, at this time, you have to mind you, it's kind of like a stock sell. It's like, you know, every minute that goes by, every commercial that played, then we got charged. So he's like, "No, I'm serious. Turn them off." And I said, "Okay, I'll call you right back." Hang up. Call, shut off the ads, call him back. And now this is like affecting our revenue and also like care on them and I about them and all that. And I said, "Hey, I'm coming tomorrow. What time?" So I go over and then I start looking at what's going on in his business. And from that point forward, I, as a marketer, I would ask these questions. Can you handle this? What kind of growth do you want? How are you going to handle it? And some clients got mad at me at the beginning. They're like, "Just do the marketing and the advert." And what people think marketing is, they think it's advertising, but really it's like so much more. And we can, I won't get into all that this moment, but I just wanted to say that, you know, I can relate to that. And that's why I bring up the word caring, because ultimately you didn't want to just promote, you know, and a commercial, you wanted to actually see them succeed. So, and that's what I think business is. My kids were asking me at one point, you know, "What is business?" And I said, "Well, it's how do you want to help people?" Is my perspective. Like, how can you serve someone, whether it's a product or service? How can you, you know, make their life better? And it can be entertainment. Like as a musician, someone has a really tough day and they put that song on and it could totally rejuvenate them. You know, it could be a movie that entertains you. It also could be a tool that makes your life easier, right? And that's what we're talking about here. And I guess, you know, let's look at that for a moment, because I know you previously told me when you started your own business, then all of a sudden, and even you just said, like the moment you met me, you were like still working those hours. So if we look at how things have transformed for you first, maybe, or wherever it is. But I kind of want to, I guess here, let me just put it this way, because I don't know the exact question in this moment. I'm looking at where you've come from and where you are now in that transition, because I think that's where a lot of people get caught. They're listening to you and I, and they're like, "Well, how do you make this transition?" So, you know, maybe we can paint that picture, like how you were working. And then if you, I guess the question came, thanks for letting me ramble here, but is, what was it about that conversation that you and I had that you were able to implement and make a difference?
Well, just consciously giving yourself permission to not have to work yourself like a dog. There's we put the pressure on ourselves that if you're not working hard, 10, 12 hours a day, then somehow you're slacking off and you're not doing yourself justice. You're not investing in your business enough. And so when you and I met and you said no, like think of yourself first and then think of your business after that, and how can your business serve your life? It was reminiscent of one of the books that really inspired me to get into business at all. There was one book that I read called The E-Myth by Michael Gerber, and it's a quintessential business book. It's almost basic for me to bring it up, but it really opened my eyes to you have to build things properly. And to your point about, hey, you can't just turn on the spigot of leads and just expect your business to just thrive. You can't just get a bunch of people in the door and sell them a bunch of product and not be able to deliver it. And so I'm dealing with that for a client right now. I have a client who is probably a year out of installations. They've sold a lot of systems to different clients, and they're struggling to find the labor in this labor market. It's really hard to get good help these days, as they say, and it's even harder. And so for me, the E-Myth gave me permission to say, if I build my company with systems, then I'll be able to succeed. If I don't build the business around my own personality or my own skill sets and putting myself at the center, but think of myself as a role and think of everybody else in the business as a role. That was the exact education that I needed at the time. And it was the exact education that the small business clients that I was meeting. So I read that book and I was inspired. And then I, put my shoes on and walked up to Main Street in Washington Street in Hoboken, and I sort of said I could do some marketing. And oh, by the way, so my whole brand of marketing was a little mix of the system stuff, like inspiring and sharing what I just learned. Because I'm the kind of guy, when you learn something, like a new word, I just want to like use that word the next day. Or if I learn about a new food, I just want to tell everybody about. So that's what I was doing. I was just sharing the joy of this solution to business and the solution to life. And then saying, oh, by the way, I could make a cool video or I could do a cool website. And so it was all those things. And it was a real organic transition. Things started to level off in my business. I figured out the right mix of consulting work and reoccurring, marketing work, that I was just able to breathe a sigh of relief, and hearing your message just gave me the permission to accept that and say, I can take a break once in a while. I can go for a bike ride. I can take a walk.
Thank you so much for sharing that, the more stories we have like this on my show, then the more people can resonate with this, because it really is that word permission. And people even say that to me. They're like, wow, you gave me permission. Well, actually, you didn't give me permission, but you made me think that I could give myself permission. But the reality is exactly that. And this goes back to the beginning of our conversation, that we put these things on ourselves according to whom, and sometimes it's this ambiguous whom, and am I good enough? Am I doing enough? And the reality that I found, because I, like you, was pouring the coals on, I totally signed up. There's people that said, if you're not working 18 hour days, you're not an entrepreneur. And there are people still saying that. There's someone's probably recording a podcast right now while we're recording this, saying that exact thing. It said so much. Right, but the reality found is, when I give myself recovery, I show up smarter. I make better decisions. And one Australian friend of mine, he said, if you're not going to meditate, take longer showers or go for a walk. And that's exactly what we're talking about. If you go for a walk or go for a bike ride, how many of where does our wisdom come from? Because if we don't give ourselves pause, we're not going to create the solutions as quickly.
Right. And that's, you know, for better or for worse, that's what I prefer spending my time doing is, if I'm involved in busy work, I start to get flustered because I want to spend my time thinking and creating and coming up with bigger solutions. And so I'm not necessarily at a place where I could just, you know, kiss the busy work goodbye. But I'm figuring out different things. Every day it gets just 1% better for our operation. And that's the best that I can hope for, I think.
I think all of us, and I think actually, I feel like I want to interject one thought, because right before recording this podcast, I got off a group workshop with one of my communities. And they, you know, I was bringing up that lesson because we think of systems and, you know, coming to even your business, we're talking about a system, but even those systems take time to implement and to, you know, it has its arc, right? Like of development and all these things. And so I wanted to impress upon everyone, and I feel compelled to share again now and like reinforcing what you're saying. I always say, if you can just alter, if you can improve or invent, it depends on where you are, one part of the system. It might be a part of a system, or it might be a system, or maybe it's a procedure, and it could just be a list. Step one, step two. Here's how we run this. Here's how we onboard a new client. I mean, I don't know. We can make up a whole bunch of things, but if you just work on one of those a week, every week your business will get better, and it does take time. And that's the other thing too. People are like, "Oh, I'm busy." Like to your point, I'm busy doing the business. And you know, just echoing what you're saying, I think E-Myth, I've read that book as well. I think it is a genius, simplified book.
Work on the business, not always in the business. Everybody spends all of their time working in the business, and they don't ever even think the idea of working on the business. That's a revolutionary thought for probably 90% of the business owners out there. And if even if they just got that one nugget of inspiration, you mean I can sit around and I can build a better thing consciously? Everybody's so busy in the day to day that they're just accepting, and they're just accepting, and this is just how it is. And to your point, I think you shared this unbelievable anecdote during the Segwit launch about your two clients that spend all day surfing on the beach now because they're, you know, just have all of this free time to work, to think of better ways to grow things, and you need that time. And you mentioned thinking in the shower. I do all my best, you know, thinking probably in the shower or just going for a walk down the block. And that's where all of the best ideas come from. The Segwit platform just all was invented through just sitting back and just almost daydreaming.
It's amazing what we can do if we gave ourselves that space. You know, I tell a lot of clients, you have more answers in your head than you know, but when you're going task to task to task, there's no space to even create. You know, it's like what they talk about, you know, like a lot of, you know, psychologists are looking at children now. If they're watching media, if they're like on games or watching videos all the time, then they're leaving no space for their own creative mind to come about. And it's the same thing when we work. So we complain about our, you know, some people will complain about their kids doing that, but then they're doing the same thing, even if the screen's not in front of their face. Although a lot of us have a darn screen in front of our face all day now, but we're working on things. And so we need to take that pause. So I don't know how you do it. I'm going to ask you in one second, but one thing I do is I put 1 hour, you know, I just say, you know, just even if you gave yourself 1 hour every day or 30 minutes every day, just to hold that space, because then the rest of the day is going to go away to fulfillment. But how do you work your calendar? How do you make sure you find space to have that daydream? Like, do you have a procedure for that, or do you just let it happen? Like, how do you go about that?
I'll have to admit, Steve, I'm not the best with planning my day and blocking out this time. I'm going to defer to my artistic background, that these moments come when they come, and they're not there when they're not there, and inspiration strikes when it does. I'm probably the worst at blocking off my calendar, and that's one thing that maybe you and I can talk about offline. Maybe you have a few tips about how I can do that, but I just make sure I get that in, because if I'm not sitting around being creative and thinking of grander macro solutions to things, then it's stressing me out. And I just find that time. If I'm, you know, just walking down the street and going somewhere, I'm thinking about some things. And so I don't necessarily block it off. It's just something that's like omnipresent for me.
And so then let's say, and thank you for that. And when you do that, like say, oh, you're walking to meet someone or whatever took you on that walk, then when that download comes, then what do you, is there a tactic after that? Do you like take notes on your phone real quick, or what do you do with that?
Well, much to the chagrin of my lead developer, I start to send messages. I start to send WhatsApp messages. I go to Google Docs. I send myself a lot of emails, which is a little strange, but it's right there. It's really easy. I would probably send myself texts, but I don't think it allows you to do that. I don't think the iPhone.
I thought you couldn't on my iPhone. I don't know if you have an iPhone, but it lets me now. I've done that before. I've sent myself a text. So then in the morning, because text will be, I look at it quicker than email, and I turn my phone off at night. So I go airplane mode. So sometimes I'll send it or put it in queue, and then it'll come when I wake up. I've done it a few times.
Exactly. So I do take notes. I jot things down. It's actually a really interesting process. When the ideas are up in your head, they sound really good. They sound like they're going to work. But when you actually put them down on paper, or you start wireframing them, because the programmers, they want to see wireframes. They don't want to just see the rantings of a crazy artistic genius. They need a little bit more to go on. And so the wireframing process, it gives you the room to start to second guess yourself. And that second guessing that's the best thing that you could do for yourself. My early career, I mentioned, was in audio production and jingle composition. And so when you're working on a song, when you're working on a tune in the studio, you start to write it, you start to produce it, and it sounds really good at the end of the first day. It sounds unbelievable. It sounds like a Grammy award-winning pop song. And then you come back the next day and you're like, oh my God, like, you know, this doesn't sound very good. And if you're self-aware, then you think, well, Jesus, like, how was I so misguided, you know, just 12 hours ago? I thought this was the bee's knees. Now I come back with fresh ears, and it sounds like, you know, slightly, you know, less than ideal. And so then you work on it, and you work on it some more, because you want it to be really good. And then you're like, okay, now it's perfect. And then you come back the next day and you're like, oh my God, it's still not there. And so I started to develop this theory that you keep on working on something and you put your all into it, and you come back, you take a rest, and you recognize that you thought it was 100% or you thought it was 90, but you have to recognize at that moment that it's probably only 50% there, and work on it for another 10 hours. And even if you think that it's 90%, recognize that it's probably only 70% there, and then put in another 10 hours. And so you have to subject your ideas to the creative process, and the creative process is second guessing. It's setting a target, but realizing that that target can move as you start to learn certain things along the process. And Segwick is the result of that. You know, songs are the result of that. And when people ask, well, how did you get from being a music major to software development? It's all that creative process. That creative process is applicable no matter what you're doing. You could drop me into maybe building bridges, and I would defer to the professionals, but I guarantee it would probably be a beautiful bridge.
You know, it's interesting that you bring that up, because in my youth, I thought I was going to be a civil engineer. I liked looking at buildings, all that stuff. I ended up falling in love with filmmaking. And you're, in a lot of ways, you're taking like a drawing that you make construction, you're taking a script, and then you're making it a movie. And then I realized when I got into business, I'm taking a business plan and allowing that to come to reality. Wow. So you're totally right. You're like working on this thing of like an idea, and then you're creating, and you get to see that, hey, there's that business, there's that movie, there's that bridge, you know, it, there's that song, you know, these are all things that can correlate. And, you know, one thing I learned from my, one of my editing teachers was the movies, as an editor, the movie's never going to be completely done, especially if you have a deadline, right? And so what I learned when you're making a feature film, so I edited two feature films that I also produced, and there's a whole bunch of stories on that, because trying to be the producer and the editor is crazy. Yeah. But I, but just to keep this story tight, I learned that you have to just edit the whole movie, and then for the rest of the time that you have until your deadline for the film festival, like at that time we were independent filmmaking, so we were going off to film festivals, then you would just go to the worst scene and make that scene better. And then you would go to the next worst scene and make that scene better. And so, but you finish the movie first and then you work back. And that's where I started learning about business. Like, you know, from an artistic standpoint, you could spend a lifetime, keep making a movie better. Like even now, those films, I could look back at all the things I would do different. But at that moment, I didn't have that wisdom, that creative outlet. You know, it's just, you're figuring those things out. So I totally can relate to editing a scene, leaving, coming back to that scene.
Right.
And it is, and this comes to business. Let's bring this in, is that, you know, the thing about that deadline that I'm bringing into this conversation is that in business, a lot of the clients I have, and I suppose a lot of clients you have, Pete, they have to go make money. And so, you know, if there was like a perfect world, you would, like, you know, if you think about your business as a remodel, you, in the perfect world, you have all the money, you move into a hotel, you get all, you eat out every day, you wait to get your whole house built and it's perfect. And then you move in. Not everyone can afford to do that. You know, the reality is most businesses, even the bigger ones, they only have so much cash flow and lenience to give something like that. And we don't want to stop business, because then even the marketplace will go away, because they'll see that you're not in business. So you have to keep going and you have to keep building. And so this comes to where you come in with Segwick, and also this whole conversation we're having. You've got to pick one part of the song. Like, what's that part that you think doesn't sound right? You're not going to scrap the whole thing and recreate. You're like working on one element. And what I always encourage, and where I am with this ramble here, is that I think any given day or any given week, we have to say, okay, what my team and I have come to, Pete, and we just kind of came to this year. I've said it a lot of different ways, but you know how even what I'm saying out loud gets simpler and simpler. We say in every week, we have a weekly systems meeting. So every Tuesday, we have a systems meeting with my main team members. And we say, okay, what's our biggest grief, or what's our biggest gain? That what can we work on? So we first attack the grief. If something happened with a customer, if we dropped the ball somewhere, what's that grief and how do we fix it now so that we can get rid of that grief? If we've solved all that and we come to a meeting, we're like, no big grief this week. Okay, what's the most important thing we could work on that's going to give us the company the most gain? Because we anticipate that any given week, we can only focus on one systems change at a time.
I'm sure you've had the experience of going into a room, or you just moved into a new space and your room, your house is just filled with boxes, just, you know, from floor to ceiling, from, you know, wall to wall. And in order to get, you know, you're looking at it and you're just thinking, oh my God, like, how am I going to get through this? This is so daunting. Never going to be able to finish this. It's never going to happen. I'm just going to be living with boxes from floor to ceiling for the rest of my life. And then you just start to pick, you know, one thing at a time and just, you know, shift things around. And, you know, eventually you have things set up the way you want. And I had a really great mentor a few years ago, just, you know, advised me to never try to boil the ocean.
That's it.
You can't. It's a big ocean. And if you try to boil it, you're going to fail. And so that was good advice as well. So you know, as you said before, there's probably some people out there just giving a podcast about how hard you have to work. You know, it seems like everything that you and I are reflecting on is people patting you on the shoulder and saying, "Hey, man, it's okay. You know, just keep going. Just don't give up." And that was, you know, even when my business was just not flying through the, you know, stratosphere, I always knew just that if I didn't give up, you know, giving up would be the only way that I was going to fail. And so I just kept at it, you know, a little bit at a time. And, you know, things are working out okay.
So let's pause real quick and take a break, and we'll be right back. I just want to give a big shout out to Pro Audio Voices. They help me with all of my podcasts, and Becky and her team are just amazing. I've known them for years, even before I started my podcast, and that's why she was my go-to, because not only does she help me sound great and produces the podcast so it's easy for me, I can do what I do best. I do the speaking and the interviewing, and then they do all that background work to help get the podcast out there in the right way with the highest quality. But on top of that, what makes it most critical to me, for those of you that know me, wow, clients are important, wow, relationships are important, and working with Becky and her team is definitely wow. I get an amazing experience. I get to work with amazing people, a lot of love and hugs, let's put it that way. So if you want to work with great people and you want to get a podcast out and you want to let go of all the technology and the way that it's recorded so you can do what you do best, then you definitely want to get a hold of Pro Audio Voices. And it's proaudiovoices.com, and you'll be able to reach Becky and her team and be able to let go of all that stuff so you can do what you do best and then delegate the rest. That's it. One of my teachers, Carl Buchheit, been a big part of my mindset in all of his work. He always says there's no failure, there's only feedback. Really, the only failure is just complete stop. Like, you know, so every day we get feedback, whether it's good or bad, and then life is a series of choices. So you get that feedback and then you choose. So if you get horrible feedback, then you say, and it, which you can even say is good feedback, because now I have an indication that didn't work. So yeah. Now tomorrow I'm going to choose not to do what I did yesterday. Or you have the opposite. You choose something and it's wonderful. And you're like, okay, choose that again. You know,
ring that bell.
That's it. Yeah. You put a dollar in a vending machine and you get $1.25 back. You're going to like, how many times can you put that dollar in? You know? So it's all choices. So, you know, this is a big point here. That knowledge, that awareness is actually what's created more rapid success in my life. That little thing that we just said right there, and what you just showed with the boxes, like anything could be gigantic. The project could be gigantic. You know, all these things are true about building a business. It never ends. So the reality is, every day we can do is get up and make the best decisions. And how do we make those decisions? Based on the feedback. And then I want to go, you said something and it just slipped in, but I'm going to put it in a slightly different word, but just being kind to yourself, like being okay, the pats on the back that you put it as, be kind to yourself. I think if you sit there and you beat yourself up, what happens is then we don't make that next choice. And I can relate. In my 20s, I lost over $4 million. And at that time, at 31 years old, when I met my first major mentor, I felt like a loser. I was like, I'm an idiot. Look at this. All my other friends in Silicon Valley are like, you know, making millions and look what I did. And then when I told this to that mentor and feeling totally vulnerable, I had never really said it out loud to anyone. People knew I was making money, but no one knew how much I had lost. And I looked at him and I'm like, see, I am an idiot. I'm like showing him. I'm like, look how an idiot I am. And then he said, wow, how many 20-year-olds, you know, people in their 20s now being in, you know, just starting your 30s, how many can say that in their they even made $4 million?
Well, you and I seem like we've both had, you know, similar highs and similar lows. I've been at the tip of elation, and I've been at the bottom of the barrel. And when you're down and you feel nothing but punches, it's really hard to see that there's there are options out there, and your mind makes it literally impossible if you start to fall into a more depressive sequence of thoughts. And I often say that the difference between people who are quote unquote, you know, being more successful versus those who are not achieving their best is the mentorship. It's having people to say, hey, it's okay. You know, when you were down on your luck, it would have been very easy for you to give up. I just lost $4 million. I'm too scared. I don't want to, I touched a hot stove. I'm not touching that hot stove again. If it was not for this mentor that you're speaking about, you wouldn't have had the courage to just get up and but all it was a change in frame. He didn't change the facts. on you. He didn't change the facts. You know, the history was still the same. He just changed your frame.
Yep.
And so just by changing your frame, it opened your eyes, right?
100%. It's like you can still cook. You just put a hot glove on. it absolutely, like, I had something to be grateful for, which actually ties back into the choice, because then at that point I can say, okay, I don't want to do that again. I don't want to touch the hot stove without a hot pad, but I still could cook. You know, it brought back the feedback. So I think why I was bringing this up, and to your point, thanks for even echoing all this. I think this is a great illustration of how we can overcome these things. When you were down on ourselves, and that's there, and sometimes we need that lifeline, because if you're so much in the dumps, it's hard to pull yourself out. You know, it's like being completely exhausted. You can't keep climbing, you know, you're going to hurt yourself. So I had that lifeline. That's one. And then I also got the feedback. It's like, oh, great. Look what you learned. How many people have the opportunity? He even went further. He said, how many people have that opportunity to have that learning at that age? So what a blessing that you lost 4 million in your 20s and not in your 60s. You know, it's going to, that would be a much harder thing, because how you have plenty of time to recover now. And you learn those lessons, you're probably going to do it different. He said, would you do it different now? And I was like, absolutely. He's like, that's exactly what. Now I got feedback going back to this, and now I can make a new choice. And I found when I was down on my dumps, I wasn't making that choice as quickly. So that's what I really noticed through my 30s, was being kind to myself, noticing something didn't work, accepting it, like being a little kid. I didn't accept when I fell off my bike. I got back on my bike. Right. And somewhere in our adulthood, we think we fall off our bike. Oh, I'm not good at riding bikes. I'm going to quit. Right. And then that's where we don't get any of the maturity in that.
Exactly. And what I love best about having good mentors in your life is that you think you have this big problem. Oh, I lost money, or you know, I'm losing, you know, my business is losing money. We're not profitable, and it's the biggest problem to you, and it's all encompassing in your head. And along comes somebody who's outside of this problem bubble, and they're able to just boil it down to just a few words. Oh, so you're telling me all this. So you have a revenue problem. Let's fix the revenue problem. And so just, oh, okay. Oh, that's what I'll start working on.
Yeah.
And so just being able to, again, it's all about the framing, I think. Just framing things in digestible tidbits. Like, you stop thinking about all this depressing stuff. Here, you have this problem. You fix it. You know the tools. You have the tools.
That's it. I mean, and that's what you do with your business now, right? So now, coming back to that, you know, that you look at small businesses and you look at how can you get throughput through their customer journey. And that's it. So here we're talking about all this, and it comes full circle to like who you are and what you're doing right now, because you're basically taking everything, all of this conversation, you're getting the feedback. And that's basically what I'm seeing from you. I'm just echoing what I'm seeing. You took feedback from clients that you were helping with marketing, saw problems, took that feedback and created a solution to help small businesses have this automation. And then, like you said, you're still working on it. You're still sending notes to the developer and all that. So it's like one of those glass eyes where you turn it, it just keeps spinning like infinity, right? You're doing it. You're doing it for your clients, and then you're doing it for business in general. Well, you know,
a lot of people build things that reflect what they were good at, and I built something to reflect what I was bad at. Well, if you read the E-Myth, one of the first lessons that he gets into is the three different personalities that a typical business owner has to handle, balance. And it's the manager, the technician, and the entrepreneur. The technician just wants to sit down and not be bothered and just do all the work. The manager wants to make sure that everything is in pretty little boxes. And the entrepreneur wants to just go out and sell, you know, regardless of their ability to deliver on anything that they're selling. They'll sell anything.
Yeah.
And so when I first started the marketing company, I was probably, you know, 50% technician, 30% entrepreneur and 20% manager, to be generous. I couldn't plan what was going to be my next meal barely. And that was what I had to work on. I had to get better at managing things and better at planning things. And when I went out into the market and I looked at software, it was my accountant, believe it or not. His name is Ryan Mitchell. I'll name drop him. He's who introduced me to my first CRM. And I just loved it. I fell in love with the ability to click a button and then some sequence happens, or click drop-down menu and some different things happen. And it gets back to when I was a kid, just playing with Legos and just playing with Technics and making things affect other things. And it was the building of complex systems. What I understood a business to be was just a bunch of complex systems that you had to make work together, like a movie. You have the script, you have the soundtrack, you have the editing, you have the graphics, and all of those layers have to just all work together seamlessly with a pop tune. You have the drums and the bass and the guitars and the keyboards and the harmonies and all this. It's just a bunch of complex systems that you have to really regulate and build into one another. And when the E-Myth made me understand that your business is nothing but systems, I was like, oh, this is perfect for me. And that became this sort of 10-year journey. And what I saw in the market just was not satisfactory. It wasn't, the CRMs that you saw on the market just weren't satisfying the needs of a small business. I saw immediately that you needed the one software, but then you needed the credit card processor and the phone system and the texting and the calendaring and the website. And so it wasn't an all-encompassing solution. This tool that was posing as an all-encompassing solution, very quickly, I found out that it wasn't. And so I wanted to give a tool to the clients that I was seeing. I didn't want them to be burdened with the integrating of all those things. Like, hey, you need this, but we also need to do all of this stuff. I said, no, we could do it better. I'm just going to take all of those functionalities and try to merge them into one piece of software so that we could just hand it to you and then we can get to work.
Yeah. It's exactly... you said so much in that, which part to pick apart, but it's so brilliant. The first thing as a small business owner, you have to identify where are your talents. Are you more the entrepreneur? Are you more the manager? Are you more the technician? And then knowing your role. And then from there, like what you're saying, how you've invented this system so that, this is, we're in a world where now we have enough technology that you can automate a lot. And then also we're in a global workforce and there are opportunities globally to work with different people that are the right person to do the job. So we have these elements where we actually can do what we do best and delegate or automate the rest.
Right. Right.
And that's the world that you live in. And you've created this system now where you can, and I know you're still working on it. I mean, like, no software developer do I know, and especially any software that's a service to their customers, is ever complete, because there's always going to be more.
there's always a new widget that needs to be applied, or there's always some patch that needs to be applied. And so it's been an unbelievable journey. I've learned so much, and I really found the stream to swim in.
It's so beautiful, and it's interesting. Like I think of the Steve Jobs quote, you can't connect the dots and looking forward only when you look back and you look at all the things that you've been through from, because look at what you brought up from your musical career to your production producing career to the marketing career, to even going back to, building as a child, the Lego. I mean, like all those things have made you the man that you are today. And now building this solution to help so many small businesses. What a remarkable journey,
Right. And just reflecting on what we were saying about the framing, in my sort of lowest points, everything that you're saying as praiseworthy, sometimes I was, in the wrong frame and I would think like, wow, I've jumped from this to that, to the other thing. Why couldn't I just stick with this thing or stick with that thing? But that's not the right framing. It really has been an evolution.
And all those parts I too, because I look back at my career and it was so eclectic, and some of my filmmaking friends that stuck with it and they're still in Hollywood right now, they look at me and they're like, you're so far from it. And you know, it's interesting, like right now we're looking at how we can start taking my lessons and turn them more into movies. So I'm like going back into production. And really, it's kind of even this, like producing a podcast, it's like some remnants of those things that made this easier for me. But the ultimate thing is like all my filmmaking, my storytelling skills turned into my marketing skills. Those marketing skills started teaching me into communicating and teaching. But each one of those, I had to learn new things. And I felt the same as you. I'm like, what am I doing? I can't get on one career path. But I look at myself now, and I've had this reflected by other coaches and other people in my life too. They're like, if you didn't have all those things, you wouldn't be this guy having all this dynamics, the same as you. Right. Like Segwick would not exist with all the dynamics of Pete. Like you, all those things make a big sandwich and made this possible. It wouldn't be like, if you had one of those things that you brought up, all those different elements of your career, this, I could probably bet money that this wouldn't exist in the way that it does right now.
Well, Steve, you're truly a brother from another mother. I mean that.
It's interesting when we meet people, we have this resonation, and you and I do remember meeting in San Francisco, and I do remember that day, how hot it was. And, you know, being a West Coaster, for all the people that know San Francisco, one, it typically doesn't get that hotter. And I've noticed, you know, people say that the climate isn't changing, but I grew up in the Bay Area, and, you know, now, you know, over four decades of living in California, it wasn't always this hot, number one. Number two, it has been not that hot that there is not air conditioning in most places in San Francisco, because we've never had to deal with that. Right. So here we are in a building with no air conditioning hitting a 90 degree day. And we're like, what is this?
My anecdote about being in San Francisco for the first time that time was, you know, I grew up in and around New York City my whole life. And so if you're up for it, you'll walk from 42nd Street down to the West Village if you feel like it. It's not too hot, not too cold. That's might be 50 blocks if you have an hour to kill. And so when I found myself in San Francisco, where the seminar was compared to the hotel, I looked at it on a map and I said, all right, that's like a nice walk. And I got maybe three or four blocks, you know, like down a 90 degree hill, like up another 70 degree hill. I was like desperate for an Uber, you know, when I was in San Francisco.
Yeah, San Francisco, there's certain blocks are not that walkable. I mean, it's a full-on workout, and I was definitely sweating that day. I'll be very transparent. Right. Yeah, it was a hot day. It was a San Francisco day to remember for sure.
But there was so much magic that happened. So many great presenters, and so I'll always remember that.
Yeah, it was worth it. It was definitely an amazing event. And, you know, and this has been an amazing conversation. Like even this, we're talking about how eclectic things can be. We're kind of all over, but if you look back at it now, there's like this theme with the whole thing, and definitely bringing things into smaller pieces. And, you know, for anyone that wants to know more about Pete or Segwick, we'll definitely put information in the show notes so you can check it out. You know, we just have a few more minutes to close out the show. I'm just really curious from your perspective and through this conversation, Pete, if there are people out there like us, which I'm sure there are, and they're going along in their business and they're doing it. And, you know, looking back at yourself, what would be one suggestion? Like, you know, because I think that's what we talked about a lot. What's the one system that you're going to work on? What's the one thing at a time that you're going to work on? For this final question, what would be the one thing that you would share as a parting idea for somebody that's looking for a starting point?
I'm on the spot, but I'm going to try to maybe frame this in a way that will bring the dots together. You have to plan your customer journey like you're plotting a scene in a movie, where, you know, some directors just let the actors just improvise and do whatever they want, and that'll carry the other directors need to really plot out step over here, do this, do that, step A before B, B before C, C before D, And for a small business owner, you take the time, even if you haven't memorized, I mean, you're doing your business all the time. You think that you take this for granted, but you know, take every single step and break down even the most minute details of the steps. If you're a consultant and you have a discovery call, and then you go back and you work on a proposal, and then you have a quote review call, and then you might follow up, and then you might have an onboarding call. You know, think about everything that you want to say along that journey as if you're going to remove yourself and replace yourself with somebody completely brand new. And that's what Segwit's about. And I think that's the secret to small business, is that if you can deliberately plan all those things out, it's going to reveal so much, because all of a sudden now you're in the project management stage. And you're like, oh my God, like there's all these things that I need to be considerate of, and I don't have them written down anywhere. And so plotting that out will give you the opportunity to really map things out. And then the next day you can show up to your staff and you say, all right, this is going to be how we're going to do this. And hey, John, you're going to say this, that, that, and then Pete, you're going to do, you know, A, B, and C. And I think that tip alone can revolutionize most businesses.
I'm 100% with you. And mapping that out is kind of like writing the script, or, you know, putting that there. And then, and just the closing thought on that is then one thing at a time, like one scene in the movie, like one of the instruments in the track and the song, you know, for one moment, you might have to concentrate on the bass line, and another, you might be, you know, looking at different parts of the song. So I think that's brilliant, Pete. It is mapping it out, and it also will improve your business. I think one closing thought for me to make a story for everyone to make this memorable. My brother, because I was in filmmaking, he got into acting. I was always having the camera and he was on the front, and he got quite good at it. And he did make a run in Hollywood, and he got some lines on in a soap opera and got some other spots down in Hollywood. And while he was doing that, he got into the serving business, and he was really a dynamic guy. And so even at like a regular restaurant, he was making $300-$400 in tips, while the other waiters were making waiters and waitresses, servers, as they're called these days, they would be making like $80 a night. And the management noticed this because he was also selling more for the restaurant. So they're like, what are you doing? And they started quickly getting him into training. And he called me one day and said, hey, Steve, my company, they want me to train, and they want me to tell people how to do what I do, but I don't know if I do anything different. I don't know what I'm going to do. And I said, his name's Brian. I said, Brian, you've got to be doing something different. If you're making $300 to $400 in a night and they're making 80, something's different. I said, okay, here's what you got to do. Go find out what you're doing different, then come back, and then I can help you. Because at that time I was already starting to teach, so he was looking for my assistance. About 3-4 weeks later, he comes back. He's like, all right, Steve, I found 6 things that I do that they don't do. And I said, all right, wonderful. And I can't remember all of them, but he told me, and he said, get this, my tips have went up. I never did all 6 at every table. I would only do a couple of them, but now I'm doing all 6 of these things at every table, and my tips went over 30% more. So now he's making, he started to make like $600 a night. And then he was able to train and become like an award-winning service trainer for restaurants because of those simple things. So I just want to tell that story. And this goes back to me telling stories, right? That story for me is exactly what you just said. It's like picking apart what you do, because it might be in your head, and listening to what Pete just said in closing here, draw it out. Even if that takes you several weeks, write out, you know, what you do. And even to your point, Pete, you might have to draw it like, how you do a discovery call? How do you onboard? You might have to do a list for every one of those, but it's worth it, because not only will you probably run your business better, you're going to make more money. You can actually do what you said, Pete. You can then delegate and automate, because you'll be able to figure out what steps can a computer do and what steps do other people do, so that you can start living the life you want. So I think that was a beautiful one thing, like write it all out. First step, brother. I appreciate you highlighting.
Sounds like I got some work to do myself.
Right now I'm thinking the same thing. I know what things I'm doing, but you know what? Like I said, every Tuesday, my team and I pick which one to work on, because I can tell you the list is long. If I could tell you all the things I would like to be improved in my business, the list is long, but that means I have a lot of stuff I can do every day when I get up, you know? So, and then I got to limit myself, going back to this whole thing, more business and more life. If I just improve one or two things every week, then my company keeps getting better. And then I don't ruin my life. Then I still have a relationship with my kids. I still get that relationship with my partner. I still get to do other things, you know, like going outside and living my life. You know? So
take a walk.
That's it. Just take a walk. Well, I so appreciate you, brother. And I know we can keep going. There's so many things to talk about with you and I. So I'm grateful that we're on this call. And
next time we'll make it all about the art and all about the creative process.
And one day maybe I'll be able to come play music with you. I don't know if I'm at that level yet, because I look at you at like a high level in that space.
Please.
But I'm going to keep playing music a little bit every day. That's one of my things, just to play for 10 minutes a day, whether I hop on the piano or play the Native American flute. Those are the two I've been messing with. But that's it. So I know maybe I do want to do that. At one point, I want to just talk about music with you.
I'll come out there. We'll jam. I'll bring a guitar.
That'll be cool. I even have some extra acoustic guitars here. So
Perfect.
All right, brother. Well, thank you, Pete, for being on the show. Pete Romano and Segwick. We'll put the information there so you can check that out. As always, I love to hear what was the best takeaway. What was the biggest aha from this show? Please let us know. And if there are other things you want to hear about or something that was sparked from this, please let us know, because it'll evoke us for other future episodes. And remember, choose gratitude and create freedom. We'll see you on the next show.
Thanks, guys.
Thanks for listening to the More Business, More Life podcast. I hope you got value. And if you did, we have so many more things for you at stevenopliton.com. You'll be able to connect with us on social media. We are active. You can ask us questions. And then on top of that, I want to give you a really big gift. And it truly is. We want to give so much value. We have an offering. It's a program called Clear Path to Customers. It's the same way that we attract wow clients and only working with the right people, the people we want to. And it's transformed my business into millions more in revenue with the right people and my clients. And we're doing it absolutely free. So you can go to stevenopliton.com and grab that. You just got to put in your information. We'll send it to you promptly. And that again is on stevenopliton.com. I look forward to having you on the next show. Until then, remember, choose gratitude and create freedom.
This podcast is a part of the C-Suite Radio Network. For more top business podcasts, visit c-suiteradio.com.